Prices Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number three, Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown and Grace Remington with you here for one more hour. Appreciate you being with us for the last 2 hours here on Channel 158 on Sirius, YouTube TV, our very own VSiN Watch app, or terrestrial stations across this great country of ours. We are watching, I'm watching maybe what I needed to happen, Grace, up there in this golf tournament at the RBC Canadian as I am watching guys not run away with it here. And I had a guy go out early and go low, and that was really good because some of these guys are struggling here to continue to advance. Rico Hoey does finish the round 6 under, so he's in the clubhouse at 11. Adam Hadwin is 6 under through 16, so he is sitting pretty there in tied for first, as is Mackenzie Hughes, who's 5 under, tied for first at 11 under. Same as Kevin Yu, same as Matt McCarty, same as Sam Burns, same as Ryan Fox, Victor Perez, Cam Champ, and Andrew Putnam. Yes, we have an 11-way tie for first place right now up at the RBC Canadian. Madness to come on Sunday.
Yeah, what more can you ask for on moving day? Going into this tournament, I kind of felt like this would be a birdie fest because there really aren't many traps on this course, which makes it even crazier when you think about the round Rory had. Like, there were some guys who were on 59 alert, and then he shoots an 80. Weird sport. Weird sport we follow.
It's very weird sport, especially when you don't have, like, the data, like, with the golf, with the course, right? I mean, you mentioned it. Like, it's just not a course that we're familiar with. And so I guessed that it was going to be low scoring, which is why my card consisted of dudes that were just, like, longer shots, you know? But, like, it was a guess. Again, I made that very transparent on long shots and whatever and all that. It was very clear that I'm guessing that it's going to be low scoring, which if it's low scoring, that means it opens it up to basically anyone in the field because all of these dudes are awesome. Right. Again, it was nothing more than a guess, but it turns out that that is in fact the case. As like we just said, as we sit right now, there are 28 guys at 9 under or better through this tournament. Wow. So it is playing quite scoreable, this course.
Your Alex Smalley bet still alive.
Yeah.
And for anyone who wants to tail you on that, he's listed 75-1 right now.
Yeah.
Despite what he leading the field, tee to green today, which makes sense. I'm just like clicking through all his stats here to see where he, I mean, that's crazy though. He's only one shot back of the lead and is 75-1 in what feels like a wide open field at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, these guys aren't running away with it. So hopefully this kind of keeps up. I'd like them to keep playing with their food out there. That would be fun for me so I can have a sweat come tomorrow when we come in here. We mentioned this before we went to break, but if you're just joining us, Jameson Taillon got it done for the Cubs. 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 5 Ks. Only 1 earned, so it is 6-1 in favor of the Cubs against the Tigers. That said, he was removed, and with him being removed, Grace, the reliever has come in and given up a couple of hits, so there's 2 on in the bottom of the 8th for the Tigers, but there are 2 outs, so that is looking up in all that. Tigers went with an opener in Holton, who gave way to Montero. Holton goes 1 inning and 1/3. Montero goes 5 2/3, so that's kind of how they chose to play it today, and they are pulling the reliever that put 2 on. So they're not messing around with this one. They're like, hey, you know what, this Tigers team's had a good season so far, we're not going to mess around. So Palencia is coming in for the Cubs here in this one, who, by the way, I thought had moved into the closer role for them, so maybe he's just going to be the high leverage guy as opposed to the actual closer for them, because it seemed as if he had gotten like the last 3 save chances for them. So I thought maybe they had just kind of moved him into the closer deal, but I guess 2 on bottom of the 8th in this, they're just going to make him the high leverage dude.
Yeah. Love watching this play out live, but this game kind of has gone to plan with Taillon being the better pitcher here. Montero gave up 4 of the Cubs' 6 runs. I figured he had been, He had been a little bit lucky, but the Cubs hanging on to a 4-game lead in the division here. Obviously, this is not a division game, but still, yeah, I can understand them not wanting to make any mistakes here.
2-0 Toronto in the fourth inning there over Minnesota. So Gausman, like I said, you either get good Gausman or you get bad Gausman. Like, it's just, so there's nothing in between so far for him. He is through 3 innings. He has not allowed a hit to this Twins team so far. It's just kind of how Kevin Gausman is. If you've ever bet Kevin Gausman, you know how it goes. It's either like you coast to a win, or it's the worst bet ever. It's already done by like the third inning because he gets blown up and gives up 8 runs and he's out of there. The big news today, Grace, as we sat here, was it is officially official. Aaron Rodgers has signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. It is a 1-year deal, 13 and change, 10 guaranteed, and up to 19 given playing time and incentives and things like that for Aaron Rodgers. So he will be under center, barring health. I mean, he's old. Things can happen in training camp or in preseason. We see it all the time. But barring any unforeseen circumstances, he will be under center there for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. I guess we can all stop talking about it now, right? But I was hoping we would see, like you, I wasn't planning on playing that Steelers win total, but I just think it's interesting to watch market movement. We haven't seen any movement yet. It's still 8.5 wins. But I'm not sure how much he moves the needle. I'm looking at some quarterback power ratings here. I mean, he ranks 22. So, he's a replacement level starter at this point. I wouldn't expect any big market movements. I said this earlier, but I'll repeat it for those who missed. One of the plays I gave out was the Jets +3 in that Week 1 game. So we do kind of get a juicy matchup to start the season there with Justin Fields and Aaron Rodgers facing their former teams. Justin Fields obviously knows this Steelers defense. His metrics have been better than Aaron Rodgers over the last 3 seasons. Rodgers does not have a good history in Week 1 games. He's 1-4. He's gone over 10 points just once in those 5 games. And I thought this was interesting too, but this is off the top of my head. I don't have the stat in front of me, but Mike Tomlin as a road favorite in September is like 29% against the spread, I think. So fading the Steelers Week 1, probably fading them or trying to find a way to fade Rodgers to start the season. I am really interested though to see the dynamic between him and Tomlin, just kind of what the level of respect looks like there. Cause obviously with the Jets, there were lots of rifts, but I mean, we'll get some drama here to start the season. I'm excited.
We won't see more hockey until Monday, but the Edmonton Oilers will head to Florida to take on the Panthers there in that one. This is out to about, what's 142 at DraftKings. I'm going to look around the rest of the industry to see if there's a better number if you do want to play the favorite in this thing. Yeah, there's 135 out there. So you can get 135 on Florida if you want to play them at home, and you can find as big as 122 out there if you want to back Edmonton. 6.5 the goals in this one. But as you mentioned a little bit earlier, Grace, as we were talking to our guest, we've seen a bunch of goals, but this is 6.5 still juiced towards the under. So people are thinking that we are not going to see, but I loved all the goals. Like, I'm as a non-hockey guy, like, yes, give me all the goals, right? I'll take all the goals. But people are thinking that this thing is going to normalize at least a little bit as we head down to Florida.
Well, what our guest said that really fascinated me. I wrote this down. Hold on. I got to find this. It was the rate at which Edmonton scores on the road, I think. Here it is. Oh, it was. Okay, so in the last 9 games against the Panthers, Edmonton is 1-5 when they score 4 or fewer goals, which is insane. So they have to win in a shootout if they're going to win at all. So if the Panthers can control the Oilers' offense in just any capacity, they can pretty much take care of business. So pretty much pick McDavid or Draisaitl, take one of them out of the game. There you go. I just thought that was a crazy, because typically 4 goals, you would think that's got to be good enough to beat anyone else. But 1-5,
Yeah, that's
1-5 when they score 4 against the Panthers.
Yeah, that's why we have a we do have another first pitch. We didn't talk about this game. The Phillies and the Pirates, Ranger Suarez and Andrew Heaney. This is Phillies minus 145 on the road over the Pirates, plus 119. If you like the Pirates at home, a flat 8 is the total. Juice towards and over here in this one. And Grace, you know, the only problem with betting an over with the Pirates is they cannot hit a lick. Like, I think that all of this dancing through raindrops with Andrew Heaney is going to go away. I think that there is going to be a time where he just starts getting tagged on a regular basis. He didn't – we talk about these adjustments with these other pitchers, Yarbrough and Webb and all of that, and that might be why they're having success. Heaney hadn't done anything differently. He's just running on the right side of variance, and I keep thinking that it's going to be the day that he gets destroyed. But the problem is you need the Phillies to basically score all 8 runs because, like, the Pirates can't score at all. So – while I also, like the market, lean towards an over, it's very hard for me to get there when I have no confidence at all in the other offense to help me out a little bit.
I agree with you, which is why I would isolate the Phillies team total over 4.5. Definitely fading Andrew Heaney. He is due some negative regression here with a 3.39 ERA, but a 4.75 expected, a 4.45 FIP. His strikeout rate at 17% is his lowest in a decade. And this Philly offense ranks top 10 against lefties.
It's a matter of time, but just make it happen. Guys, we're running a contest, by the way, and so you still have time to enter the Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge over there. We're running it along with First Bet. You can head to my Twitter, at MattBrownM2I, actually, or VSiN Live. I put out a thing where you can go and enter. Just click one time, go in there, and get it done. It's absolutely free to enter, VSiN.com/Belmont, and you can win real prizes in this thing. Still time to enter. Go do it.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Grace Remington with us here on a Saturday. 6-1 still Cubs over Detroit. Still scoreless, actually, in that Dodgers and Cardinals game. We were saying there might be a little value on the Cardinals just given the price that had drifted so incredibly far. Got up over $2 on the Dodgers before that thing took off. Blue Jays still holding on to that 2-0 lead there on the Twins. That said, bases loaded and one out, so Kevin Gausman has decided to go back to being Kevin Gausman yet again. So Kevin Gausman has put some runners on there. We'll see if the Twins can get something done, scrape some people across. I'm looking out here behind me. People are signing up for the contest, Grace. We've got 527 people in Survivor currently. We have one in the Grandissimo. I'm going to move around some still got to move around some funds. You know, I'm going to, like, diversify some of my things and the what's nots and where Farrar Dales to get to just to get my 100K together. It's you know, we're moving some stuff around, the Bitcoin and stuff. And, you know, whatever. We're just, you know, we're just going to – we'll figure out a way, like, to get in there. But, again, got the $100,000 buy-in there for the Grandissimo. 1.5 guaranteed if you've got, you know, if you got six figures laying around, you want to come join the Survivor Contest. It is here for you. Now joining us here on the program, Grant Mitchell. You can find him, sports betting journalist over at Forbes Magazine, at Mile Mitchell over there. Hey, Grant, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me.
So we look at game number one, in which I will admit I had a bet for OKC to win game one and win the series. I was not willing to lay the 700. Well, win game one, win the series, knocked that price all the way down to minus 275. I'm now out money, a lot of money as I lose that game. Did you, and you know, again, it's fine if you were in the same boat as me. Did you give the Pacers a chance to win on the road here in game one at all? Or were you as surprised basically as it seems like 90% of the sports world was?
Oh man, if you walked around my house, you'd probably find holes in all of the walls because I was smacking my head into everything I could find after that game. I think outside of the people who live in the state of Indiana, I've been more supportive of the Pacers than anybody, and I took the Thunder on the spread in game one, and I deserve what came to me. I mean, this is just a team of destiny, and I bet against them, and I deserve to lose.
So wanted to get your thoughts on the spread for game two, because it's even bigger than it was for OKC in game one, moving from 9.5. Now this one opens at minus 11. So the odds makers aren't buying into that Pacers comeback, but how are your feelings on this?
So I'm just going to be straight up with you guys right here. I'm done betting the spread in this series, at least until I get some stabilization here. Now, if you're asking me what is my pick, keep in mind, I'm not putting money here. I want to be transparent. But my pick would be the Thunder on the spread again. I know that you can look at their record against the spread in these playoffs, and I believe they're now 7-10, something like that. But they are still 6-3 on their home court. And at home, they're outscoring their opponents by about 15, 16 points per 100 possessions in 2025 alone. This is still an incredibly dominant team. If you take out game one, the Thunder beat their opponents on their home court by about 25 points per 100 possessions. So while the Pacers are the comeback kids, let's not forget that OKC is a dominant team. And let's not forget they were dominating this game. They had a 15-point lead with just about 9 minutes left to go. Whether or not you have the courage to hold on against the Pacers in the fourth quarter, we'll see how that goes. But if I am an OKC bettor, I'm feeling good because Tyrese Halliburton said we're playing with house money from here on out. I don't like that. I want the killer gene. I want the aggressiveness. I want him to say we won game one and we're coming back to win game two. Don't already call this a write-off. So again, not betting it personally because I'm not going to continue to let the Pacers ruin my day, but I do think the Thunder will cover.
Not holding you to this, you know, like you said, but I know this is not an official bet, but just more curious than anything else. If you are right now entering the market and you were betting exact games, is there a chance that OKC just rolls through and sweeps this thing on the way out and we end up with a gentleman sweep anyway? Or you think six games? Could this thing actually go seven games?
I mean, the gentleman sweep is on the board just because you have to look at how dominant OKC was this year, but I'm not going to say that, no. I think something that people are letting cloud their judgment is that little four right in front of the Pacers at the bottom, because they're the four seed. Well, they actually have the second best record in the NBA in 2025, which is 50, 60 games at this point. So them and the Thunder have legitimately been the two best teams in the NBA for more than half of a year. So I do still think the Thunder will win the series, and you're seeing that reflected by the odds price. But I think six games is the minimum here. I could even see this being seven. Wasn't so sure on that before game one, but the Pacers have proven that they can continue to hit shots at a high level. You know, OKC had the best defense in the NBA, but the Pacers went 48% from the field, 46% from three in game one. If their offense is going to do what it does, and that's despite the 25 turnovers, yeah, this series could go seven.
Tyrese Halliburton coming off a night in which he scored 14, had 10 rebounds, 6 assists. That's an interesting quote, though, you mentioned from him. Playing with house money, that's not what you want to hear in the finals. So it looks like you're fading him. Which prop are you taking?
Yeah, I'm going to be looking at the under on both point guards, actually, in the assists market. The way that the defenses are set up, they're designed to play teams very straight on. And you've seen that with the Pacers throughout these playoffs, really. Giannis's numbers were video game-like. Donovan Mitchell didn't shoot the ball well, but he was allowed to get his shots. He had a couple of big games in the last round. Karl-Anthony Towns had some big games. Jalen Brunson had big games. They're playing guys one-on-one, and it's the same thing on the Thunder side. They know how talented and how deep they are. They don't have to rotate off of anybody. Lou Dort can guard whoever he's in front of. Jalen Williams can guard whoever he's in front of. So if anything, I think the way to do this is, like I said, bet the under on the assist totals for these point guards. But if you're insisting on going to the prop market, bet the over on the points, because the teams are going to let whoever's got the hot hand, they've got the hot hand for the night. We're taking away everybody else. No ball movement, turnovers, disruption. And you saw that in game one. And real quick here, one of the biggest adjustments that Rick Carlisle made as that game went on, the Pacers, who are known for their incredible ball movement and constant rotations and actions, they said, no, one, two passes. The best shot you're going to get is the most open one, and that's usually the first shot. We get it across half court, give it to the next guy, he takes the shot. So, yeah, I think there's not going to be a ton of assists here.
Talking to Grant Mitchell from over at Forbes. Grant, I heard a lot of breakdowns for this Pacers team all along the way for every series, every game. Leading into the playoffs, I did not hear, you know, the X factor for the Pacers is going to be Pascal Siakam. Like, I did not hear anybody's opinion that the X factor was going to be Pascal Siakam. And yet here we are with this guy playing like this is 5 years ago.
So I think the reason that you may not have heard that is because it almost sounds a little cheap. Because you look at it and he leads the team in scoring in the playoffs. And he's the only one on this team who's been to the NBA Finals, and he's an NBA champion. But no, Aaron Nesmith, he's the X factor. Andrew Nembhard, he's the X factor. And I'm not disrespecting those guys because they play massive roles on this team. But we are forgetting about Pascal Siakam. This is a guy who's averaged 21 points per game in the playoffs so far. He scored 19 in game one, which means he actually did cash the under on his prop of 19.5, but it's only at 18.5 for game two. And personally, I just feel like they've got to get him more involved. One of the biggest things I noticed is when OKC made that lineup adjustment and they had Cason Wallace in the starting lineup, Siakam, who's great at getting these mismatches, partially because he's kind of a tweener forward, he isolated Cason Wallace on the block quite a fair few times. And once he got to the second, the third quarter, there was more minutes matching between Siakam and Alex Caruso. So keep an eye on that. Caruso might even start game two. I don't know. But I think because of his blend of size, strength, and speed, and how OKC appears willing to downsize, I think you're going to find him or see him find a lot of mismatches in the post and hopefully get some cheap buckets and get hit the over on his prop there at 18.5.
Game one went under the total. Game two opens a point lower at 228.5. What are you doing with this number?
So I don't think the Pacers defense has really got enough respect for what it's done in these playoffs. And if you watched game one in real time, it felt like such a dominating performance by the OKC defense because they forced those 19 first half turnovers and 25 for the game. But then you go look at the box score afterward and OKC was below 40% from the field, below 40% from three. And although they ended up shooting 24 free throws, a lot of those came late in the fourth quarter. Indiana, which had actually allowed more free throws per game than anybody, did a tremendous job of defending without fouling. I also expect OKC to defend better because they are the best defensive team in basketball. So you've gotten two teams that have proven themselves, and I think you're going to see the game slow down just a ton. I think Indiana came out a little frantic. And with the defense that both these teams are playing and are capable of playing, if game one's going over and I expect there to be fewer points in game two, then I'm absolutely taking the under there.
He is Grant Mitchell. Be sure and check out his work over at Forbes. Grant, appreciate the time today, and good luck on all the bets.
Thank you. You guys as well.
Guys, a reminder, $199 will get you a year of VSiN Pro, and if you use the promo code BOOK, B-O-O-K, it will also get you a pre-order of Josh Applebaum's new book coming out on the NFL and NFL betting. Not only do you get that, but you also get the best bet emails, you get all the splits, you get the video feed of everything we do, and all of the betting guides as well. VSiN.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Here's Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Grace Remington with you here. Race number 7, I think it is about to go off over there at Saratoga. So we still have some time between now and when the actual Belmont goes off. But Grace, it does say sloppy. Conditions sloppy. So they're going to be mudding out there.
I'm excited. I got to go back and take a screenshot of everything Mike Somich told us. He's always right. At least he taught. I feel like we asked him so many questions, and he's probably like, man, these people got to do their own research. Because he probably talked about the same four horses for the duration of that segment, and we just kept going and going. But yeah. I always learn a lot from you him. Know, so I'm ready for today's race. Yeah,
go in, see if we can't try and win some money. Other ways to win some money today. UFC 316. Now joining us here, Reed Kuhn. You can find him over at Fightnomics.com, at Fightnomics over on the Twitter machine as well. Reed, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. It's fight day. It's Saturday. Weather's nice. I'm ready for some action.
It is a really, really interesting main event in which we have Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili. And, you know, this had ballooned out, Reed, to on the other side of $3. I mean, this was Merab minus 320 in some spots. And now we're seeing the money come in and start to flood in on Sean O'Malley. I don't think that's a shocker. He is certainly the more popular fighter amongst the casual fans. And Merab doesn't really, let's just be honest, like, Merab doesn't really do anything that excites the crowd all that much. We know how he wins and his method of winning. We're seeing all the way down. If you want to go to FanDuel, minus 260 on Merab now. So it has moved a ton. The market high, plus 230 out there on Sean O'Malley. How do you see this rematch going?
Similar to the first one, I think I was pretty deep on Merab the first fight, and the numbers, if anything, have actually gotten better for him because he did so well in that fight. He also had another title defense against Nurmagomedov and actually did pretty well against a very good grappler. So if anything, the numbers have gotten better for Merab. They got a little bit worse for O'Malley. So the models are actually seeing they're really doubling down on Merab here.
O'Malley hasn't fought since September 2024 when he lost his title by unanimous decision. What do you think is going to be the biggest factor for him tonight?
Well, he says he's a new man. He's, you know, cleaned up his act a little bit. He's had the best camp. He's coming in phenomenal shape. That's all great. I think the issue here is, can he stop those takedowns? And that was the glaring issue in the first fight. Merab just puts on that forward pressure. He can bully you for five straight rounds. He has a gas tank for days. And O'Malley just didn't have anything to put up with that. He needs range to succeed. And if Merab really stuffs that position, he's not going to give him the range. Now, O'Malley, like, to give credit where it's due, he is one of the best, most accurate strikers in the UFC. He is phenomenal at long range, very precise. He knows how to find the chin, just hasn't really found that now that he's facing stiffer talent who also can change levels. And we didn't really see the fight evolve too much with Aljamain Sterling when Sean O'Malley won his title. But since then, it's Merab here, and he's another dual-level guy. He can strike. He can push you around. He can get you against the fence. And I do think we're going to see a lot of clinch work against the cage because that's how Merab will drag you down. So I think it could be, honestly, kind of a boring fight if Merab fights where he is safest. But O'Malley, you know, he's got to start every round at distance. He's going to have his moments. Merab has to be careful.
Reed, to play devil's advocate here, to play on the other side of this one, you've got Merab, who basically has one. I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility that he knocks Sean out or anything, but like, you just look at his track record, he's a decision machine, right? So it almost seems like it's kind of one path to victory here. If he's not able to get these takedowns at the rate that maybe, you know, he thinks, or his coaches think, or even some of the betting public thinks, there's a world that O'Malley could win a decision, right? I mean, I don't know if we think that he's going to knock out Merab or anything like that, but I mean, he needs to steal three of the, basically stay on his feet for three of the five rounds. He could lose the other two if he gets taken down, but that's kind of probably how O'Malley gets there, right? It's probably O'Malley by decision.
I he has six knockdowns in his career, including a spectacular one against Sterling, who he got, you know, caught him coming forward. And Merab is going to be in those positions. He's going to be coming forward to stuff the distance, put him against the cage, drag him down. So there will be moments. It's just Merab has been very resilient, very durable. And so I think he also likes to fight with a very high pace. And I think that could kind of confuse or shut down O'Malley because it's hard to defend strikes and the takedown simultaneously. And that's what Merab is doing. He's changing levels. He's offering a kind of a dual threat. So if anything, I would probably say Sean's best path is TKO, because I don't think he wins three out of five rounds. His takedown defense is average, statistically speaking, it's average. And so that's not going to be enough when Merab is firing off three, four times the average takedown rate of a UFC fighter. If he doesn't get you on the first one, he's going to push you against a cage and eventually drag you down. So I do see Merab as more likely to win a decision. And actually, if you need to get that price down, that's probably how you do it. You go Merab by decision.
In the women's bantamweight title fight, Kayla Harrison, a massive favorite. She opened minus 700. Juliana Pena plus 455 is what I'm seeing. What are your thoughts on how this one goes down?
Yeah, again, this is based purely on the numbers here. And the numbers love Kayla Harrison. So, you know, one of the really important factors in my work is the amount of time you spend in ground control. And that metric, Kayla Harrison is the highest fighter of anybody on this card. So at 37%, she's spending almost 2 minutes out of five on the ground controlling an opponent. And Pena has historically relied on her wrestling offensively, but defensively, her takedown defense is really bad. So that's a huge liability. If you're only able to defend a quarter of the takedowns, Kayla Harrison's going to run right through that. So this is kind of similar to the main event. I don't think Harrison wants to stand and trade with Pena. Pena actually has some pretty accurate hands, and Harrison hasn't really shown that she's fully crossed over from her judo days into striking. But Harrison wants this on the mat, and this turns into a wrestling match, I think she loves it.
Talking to Reed Kuhn, you can find his work over at Fightnomics. Reed, a fight that everyone should tune into, whether you are a big UFC fan or MMA fan or not, Kevin Holland, Vicente Luque. I just expect violence in this one. How do you expect the violence ends up?
Yeah, no surprise. I think a lot of people are expecting a finish because these guys, let's see, 16 total knockdowns scored between them. They both have offense for days, no question. So to me, I'm looking at the defense. Who's going to be more resilient here? Luque, unfortunately, has taken a lot of damage in his days. He's been dropped 4 times of his own. Holland, never been dropped. Holland's going to look like he's almost a different weight class. He's going to be way taller, way rangier, much bigger. And therefore, at distance, Holland's hands could find the mark because Luque, his defense is a liability. He has poor head strike defense. In fact, I had to look it up. He has the worst head strike defense of anyone on this card. That's not good when you're facing someone like Kevin Holland in an 81-inch reach. So I do think there's going to be violence. But if they start trading leather, I think it's Luque that goes down first. Because this fight, if he takes something like 40 or 50 head strikes, he's going to hit the 1,000 career mark. That's 1,000 head strikes he's taken in UFC action over the years, 212 minutes of octagon time. The guy has logged some wars already. And I don't think he wants to get into just a stand and bang type situation. I think he probably wants this on the ground. Holland, to his credit, he's going to have that range. I think he stays moving and he picks him apart from the outside.
One of the bouts here that's a little more closely priced in the market is this men's heavyweight between Sergey Spivak and Cortes Acosta. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, this is a striker grappler. At least that's how it's going to play out. Spivak being the grappler. And Cortes Acosta definitely has the better hands. He has the knockdowns. He has accuracy. He has defense on his side. Now, he's not an incompetent grappler, but Spivak is just a dominant wrestler. So sound like a broken record here. You know, Spivak, his wrestling, he spends a lot of time in control on the ground. In fact, I think he's second behind Kayla Harrison, not far behind her in terms of spending just a lot of minutes like on your opponent. Now, the reason that this is going to stay a closer price than a lot of the other very chalky matchups is because of the threat of the knockdown. You know, Spivak is not great with his hands. He's been dropped twice. He does not want to trade leather with Cortes Acosta. He wants it on the mat. So I'm looking at the takedown defense of Cortes Acosta. It's okay. 67%. It's slightly above average. I don't know if that's going to be enough to stay off his back. And if Spivak can just wear him down, kind of wear down the early threat, these are heavyweights. They don't age well into the third round. I think Spivak just kind of grinds him. So I am on Spivak here. I think I'm also leaning more towards over, and I hope he wastes no time whatsoever in open water.
He is Reed Kuhn, UFC handicapper over at Fightnomics.com, at Fightnomics over on the Twitter machine. Reed, appreciate the time today, and good luck on all the bets.
Thank you.
It is it's going to be fun. I got in on O'Malley at a much bigger price. I knew the money was going to come in towards him on fight day. That's just kind of the way it goes with these popular fighters that have big numbers next to their name. And so I'll break that down a little bit more as we move into the final segment here. Already 3 hours in the books here, Grace. I mean, so we've got LSU up 3-1. I'm feeling good around here. Let's see if we can't get out of here on a high note. Final segment, Ready, Set, Bet when we come back.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final segment, Ready, Set, Bet here on a Saturday. Matt Brown and Grace Remington wrapping things up. Baseball out there. Cubs get it done, so chalk that one up. Winner, winner for you, Grace Remington. And we did not see a run cross there, despite the fact that the Tigers did get some ducks on the pond. So Palencia comes in. 1 1/3 innings for him, and closes things out there for them. So 6-1 victory for the Cubs over the Tigers, and Tigers just never really got it going today. No real opportunities to get into that one. 2-2 now, Toronto and Minnesota. That is in the bottom of the sixth inning. Still scoreless Dodgers and Cardinals there in the sixth inning in that one. And then rest of the first pitches will be coming to you here in about 20 minutes. We've talked about some of those games. But let's go ahead and get to our G-Bank best bets here. And Grace, you've got a couple of baseball games.
I do. So I'll start with my official best bet. Mm-hmm. We're going to take an underdog here and go with the Marlins +135 against the Rays. I think these two starting pitchers should be more closely rated than the market is making them today. You look at Ryan Weathers toeing the rubber for the Marlins side here. He has a 2.49 ERA, and it looks like it's pretty legit. His expected ERA is 2.65. His strikeout rate is up above 25%, has a low barrel and hard hit rate. I said earlier I was looking for spots where there might be regression, and the only pitches he throws where it looks like he's gotten lucky on are his sweeper and his slider, and yet the expected WOBA is still 170, which is elite. So, and he throws that, but honestly, it's hard to tell sometimes with StatCast if the slider or sweeper are actually two pitches or one that were just kind of, you know. But either way, those pitches or that pitch, he throws it 20% of the time. So if that's his luckiest pitch, I think we're in good shape here. Taj Bradley, he's due some negative regression here. He's a 4.95 ERA, a 4.24 FIP. The strikeout rate is down from his career average. His walk rate is up above 9% at this point. And it looks like the four seamer is the problem spot for him. It has a 3.49 expected WOBA. So basically, I just think these two teams should be priced more closely together. So take the underdog here, Marlins +135.
A couple of baseball bets for me. I took Mitchell Parker alt line strikeouts. And again, you're getting big plus money on this guy. So, I mean, it might not, it's not expected to happen, obviously. But the thing is I just, you know, you dig in, it seems not real, but over the last 3 weeks, the Rangers have struck out 33% of the time against left-handed pitching. I knew the offense was struggling mightily. I just had no idea how bad they had been struggling specifically against lefties. And so we'll see if Parker, who's a low strikeout guy, which is why we're getting the big numbers that we're getting on him to only get 5 and 6 Ks. By the way, you're getting over 3-1 on 6, and you're getting over 2-1 on 5. And so did throw that one in there. And then I like Morton and the Orioles tonight going up against the A's and Severino. You can still find a 125 out there on this, which I think is still playable for the Orioles. They've actually figured out a little bit of baseball. It only took them until June to figure out how to play baseball. So, Grace, it only took them until June. You know, a little late start there. Maybe would have liked them to possibly, you know, crank it up earlier on in the season. Maybe some of us have Orioles division tickets. I'm not going to point at anybody, but I'm pointing at myself for the radio listeners. I do, but you know, I don't really care how they do in the division now, because I consider that bet lost. But win me a bet tonight against the A's. And then a reminder, Mike Somich is again, he'll be on the network here in just a little bit. But if you got errands to run, if you got things to do, if you're going to be out of the car, if you're not going to be listening to us or watching us on the TV, he is going with Baeza to win. He put $20 on Baeza to win. There's also a $20 exacta with Baeza and journalism, and then a $5 superfecta that will end up costing you $20. So basically, you key the 6, and then it is 6 with 3-7, 6 with 2-3-7, and then 6 with 2-3-7. So again, you put the 3-7 in the second spot, you put the 2-3-7 in both the third and the fourth spot. That will cost you $20, and that is the superfecta that he is going to play here for the Belmont Stakes. And you know, Grace, listen, it's $20 for a superfecta long, you know, it's hard to pick the four horses to run in order, but you know, it costs you $20 and you have a sweat on the race. So I think everyone should just give it a whirl, you know?
No, it's good stuff. You read that really well. Like all that's tricky. I had to like pull up the actual post positions here so I can see the horses' names. I'd be like, can we respect them? Can we call them by their name? Why do we have to list them by their number?
I've had this conversation with Somich before. It's
oh,
like,
you have? Yeah, oh, okay, good.
It's like, I'm like, hey, listen, you know, I mean,
they work too hard for this.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, we're sitting here like, we'll talk about the jockeys, we'll talk about the trainers, and then like it's the horse is there just a number. He's just 5. He's just 3.
Come on.
And you know what? it's not even like it's their jersey number because the numbers change. That's why I don't like that we go talk about them by number, because the next time they race, it's going to be a different number. They're going to be in the four. They're going to be in the four hole or the one slot or the eight slot. I mean, I agree. Yeah. We need to treat them.
Baez is not waking up at 4 a.m.
No,
for this.
I know. Seriously, guys, come on. We're talking names of horses from now on. We're not doing this whole number thing. It's a good 500 trifecta. By the way, guys, from GBank First Bet and VEASAN, all you got to do is sign up for a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days. Deposit and play through $1,000 in First Bet is going to trigger that $500 trifecta there. So you'll get $200 in cash back rewards for your GBank Visa Signature credit card. Then First Bet is actually going to give you a $100 deposit match because of what you have done. And then we are going to go ahead and round things out with a VEASAN Pro subscription for you. So that's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VEASAN. Head on over to VEASAN.com/GBank. That is VEASIN.com. The letter G, BANK. It is a one-time promotion, and it is limited to customers who are opening a new account in response to this offer. It's not going to apply to requests to convert existing accounts over there. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. That is VEASAN.com/GBank. Whew, look at that. But you can go, free money. Free money is good. That's a hell of a read. I mean, it's a hell of a read, but it's a hell of an offer, too. You know?
It
it's a hell of a read,
no,
but a
really
hell of
is.
An offer. That's the way that we'll
shout out to our
shout out to GBank and First Bet and everybody else.
Yeah, I can if you sign up for that offer, I can throw out some extra plays here if you need something to spend all those big sign up bonuses on.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you know.
What about I just think it was funny listening to your play about Mitchell Parker. I think it works for a long shot bet, but my thought process going into this one was, the Rangers offense has been dreadful. Bottom three against lefty since May 1st. But I was looking at it more like, hey, Mitchell Parker, exactly what the doctor ordered. So I'm like, give me all the runs.
It could be. Yes. No, I mean, it definitely could be. He's not good. He's not good. I'm just playing against how bad that this Rangers offense has been. God, it's been absolutely...
We'll see which bad side is worse. That's what we're betting on, which bad side is worse.
It is. Yes, we're betting it's the lesser of the two evils. Instead of the lesser of the two evils, it's the lesser of the two terribles. So Lee Hodges is your leader at the RBC Canadian. He has finished his round at 7 under, so he's in the clubhouse at 13 under. Matt McCarty is 6 under on his round through 14. He is at 13 under. And Matteo Manassero is 5 under through 13. He is at 13 under as well. So we have three atop the leaderboard at 13 under, a whole bunch of dudes at 12 and 11 that include Mackenzie Hughes, Kevin Yu, Ryan Fox, Rico Hoey, Benny Ahn, Victor Perez, Cam Champ, all sitting there at either 12 or 11. And then a lot of people still hovering there at 10. So I imagine when I come in here tomorrow, Grace, we will still be talking about that this tournament could be won by 10 different people.
Anyone.
Yeah, like 10 different guys, depending on how they go. I mean, look, there are Cam Champ is at plus one, and then we have Alex Smalley in the clubhouse at 7 under, right? So the range of outcomes is like 8 strokes amongst guys that have actually been playing well in this tournament.
Every time I pull up the leaderboard, it's not even a different leader at the top. It's like the top five names are different.
Yeah, everyone's just shuffling around.
Yeah, Cameron Champ, after 2 rounds, was the only guy to be bogey-free. He finally scores a bogey on his second hole today, and he's held par after that. But I guess it's going to be a birdie fest from this point, right?
It is. Guys, enjoy the Belmont. Enjoy the Super Regionals. Enjoy the golf. Enjoy the UFC, whatever you are watching. And betting. Stick around for Live Bet Saturday when we get done right here. And then that's going to be followed by At the Track, Road to the Belmont. That's going to be Samich and Patrick Maher getting you through that. And then when they get done, more Live Bet Saturday. For Grace, I am Matt. Good luck on all your bets.